Well, as we covered earlier in the program, the former cricketer and now Pakistani politician Imran Khan injured his head when he fell during an election rally off the stage in Lahore. Imran Khan is leader of the Pakistan Movement for Justice Party, and he was campaigning ahead of the weekend's general election. And the poll will mark a democratic milestone in Pakistan because it's the first time a civilian government has served a full term. And that goes to answer our next question, really. Is Islam incompatible with democracy? Is it inherently difficult for Muslims to coexist in secular or multi-faith societies? It's a question so often posed, especially since September 11, and the answer is a clear no. Asia has always provided the most compelling proof. This is the argument from our guest, Associate Professor Lily Rahim from the University of Sydney. She's edited a major comparative work on the topic, Muslim Secular Democracy. And she joins us now in the breakfast studio. Lily Rahim, good morning.
Good morning.
So the five countries on earth with the most Muslims are all full or hybrid democracies. India, Indonesia, with Pakistan, Egypt, Bangladesh. Is that the foundation of your argument?
Yes. Well, I argue in the book that most Muslim majority states were actually conceived initially as secular or quasi-secular democracies. But many of these states have, since the mid-20th century, moved closer towards the Islamic State paradigm with the onset of Islamization and political Islam, which swept through the Muslim world, particularly after the Iranian Revolution from the late 1970s. And what we're attempting to do in this book is to dispel many of the negative myths associated with the secular state and secularism.
But isn't the caliphate, the Islamic State, the blending of the religion and the government at the foundation of Islam?
Well, we argue in the book that the Islamic State is actually a modern-day 20th century construction, by and large.
So what was the caliphate run by the disciples of Muhammad?
Well, we argue in the book, and so do many Muslim scholars and intellectuals around the world, that the Islamic State during the time of the Prophet Muhammad was in fact something, a phenomenon which is something unique to that period, the Medinan period in the 7th century, and therefore cannot be replicated. And these Islamic states, supposed Islamic states that have emerged since, particularly in the last couple of centuries, are very much politicized entities geared towards legitimizing ruling elites.
But we know that there are thousands of Muslims all around the world, most particularly the Middle East, but not just, who do not think the caliphate is a unique historical entity. They want it replicated in the modern world and they're willing to use force to achieve it.
Well, we argue in the book that this is true, that many Muslims subscribe to the belief that to be a good Muslim, one has to support the idea of an Islamic State. However, if we look around us today in the early 21st century, we find that Islamic States have been a failure in terms of promoting citizenship rights, in terms of promoting modern dynamic economies, in terms of promoting social justice, in terms of promoting democratic rights.
Which countries are you talking about?
Well, the obvious one would be countries like Saudi Arabia.
And Iran.
And Iran, and Sudan, and I could go on.
And neighbouring these countries, we have, well, increasingly less, we have countries ruled by secular autocrats where they do not rule the state as an Islamic state, and their human rights situation can be as bad or worse.
Exactly.
Saddam Hussein, the Shah of Iran, Bashar al-Assad, all secular.
Yes.
Nominally.
Nominally. Yes, so this is the main thrust of the book. We argue that Muslims today in the 21st century are increasingly rejecting in an overt manner, and the Arab uprising was a clear manifestation of this. Muslims rejecting authoritarian Islamic states as well as authoritarian secular states. And that's borne out in many surveys, global surveys, such as the Gallup poll survey, such as the Pew's Attitudes Survey and the World Value Survey. These surveys systematically highlight that Muslims reject the various forms of authoritarian rule. And what we find is this yearning within the Muslim world for a middle way. And in the book, we characterize this middle path as the wasatiya democracy.
So this middle way does not mean, say, France or Turkey, where they're quite aggressive in their secularism. You reject that just as you reject the theocracy.
Yes. Well, we analyze the various forms of secularism and secular states in the Muslim world and beyond. And what is clear is that Muslims are not supportive of what we call the assertive secular state, where religion is not permitted in the public sphere. Muslims are opposed to that form of secularism, as found in Turkey during the Atatürk era. It's been reformed now under the AKP government. But a good example of that kind of assertive secularism is found in modern-day France, the laïcité French secularism.
So could I summarize this by saying Muslim women, insofar as one can generalize, don't like being told by the French they can't wear a hijab and don't like being told by the Iranians that they must wear a hijab?
Yes, that sort of compulsion is something which is rejected by many Muslims.
You speak about the opinion polls, but elections are more important than opinion polls. And in Egypt, we've seen the Muslim Brotherhood attain success. How does that fit into your analysis?
Well, this is interesting in the sense that many Islamist parties, such as the Muslim Brotherhood parties throughout the Middle East, have been relatively successful after a prolonged period of authoritarian rule. In the case of Egypt, is after that prolonged period of authoritarian rule under the Mubarak regime. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood and its organizations have developed very strong roots within the community, and they've been able to utilize that when running for elections. It's clear to many that they did not initiate the Arab uprising, Tahrir Square, but they benefited from the ouster of the autocrat Mubarak because of their networking, their grassroots activities and so on, something which the liberals and other kind of secular Democrats do not have.
The same in Syria as well, and that's given rise to fear of all the things you oppose in both those countries, a fear of militant Islam dictating to the entire country, a top-down Sharia-imposed law.
Yes, well, it's unclear who these militants attempting to overthrow the regime are. So the situation is unraveling in Syria. But with regard to non-violent protests in other parts of the Muslim world, I think this is the kind of paradigm which many Democrats in the Muslim world are attracted to, as opposed to the more violent approach towards regime change. And it would be, I think, in my short period during this interview, I think not in the interests of rigorous analysis for me to make, you know, sweeping statements about Syria versus regime change in Syria versus regime change in Egypt versus regime change in Tunisia and so on. They're all quite different political scenarios.
And of course, it's that variety which is, again, the foundation of your book, which goes into so much detail. Associate Professor Lily Rahim, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
A Muslim Secular Democracy is the work she has compiled and edited. It's expensive, as great academic works often are, but it's a very good read.